Call the Dogs with Chancey and Chi. Happy Hate Week. It's finally here. Sorry about no episode last week. Life sometimes gets in the way, but we just wanted to save it all to talk about how much we hate Florida. And man, do we hate Florida. It's like I told you before we got on here, it's my favorite pastime. It's the thing I enjoy doing most.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, welcome back to the best week of the year. I actually was thinking about it. We have every year this episode is called We Hate Florida. And I'm trying to think of what volume this would be. So we haven't named it We Hate Florida every year, but I think it's been at least the fourth year in a row. So this is volume four or so, somewhere around there. But man, this is you and I. If anybody that's been following us making this podcast the last 6 years or so, they know that this is our favorite team to hate, and one of our favorite weeks of the year.
It's a family thing. It's how I was raised. It's who we are. And might be some brainwashing in there somewhere, but that's happened over the course of my life. But when I see these people and I see the life decisions they made, and I know they think the same thing about us, but I don't really care. And it makes me question just why they are the way that they are. You know, what has led them to get to this point in their life? And I have empathy for a minute, and then I hate them again. So that's pretty much the crux of it. But
well, you growing up in South Georgia, I mean, you're what, 20 miles from the Florida border or something like that. I mean,
we're having to defend the line here. I mean, we're having to hold them back. We're trying to keep hell away. You know, trying to keep the enemy at bay.
Yeah. Get back. Yeah, I mean, that's it's funny because, I mean, and growing up, of course, you know, being from Middle Georgia area, you know, this was not my first Georgia Florida that I ever went to. Was my our freshman year in college. And so, and I know we talk about this every year, kind of like walking through this whole thing, but it's such a different thing for you being a South Georgia guy. And also it's funny because, like, you, I mean, and I'm sure you know a lot of people like this, but sometimes, for a lot of South Georgia people, this is the only Georgia game they go to all year, because it's a hop, skip, and a jump compared to, you know, driving all the way up to Athens. So, whenever your biggest game of the year is Jacksonville, the cocktail party, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, as it is still should be called, I think, you know, it's funny to me that the talking heads decide that they want to change the name or remove the actual name, and they think that that's going to affect the alcohol consumption and probably increased it more than anything. But that's, it's just the pageantry of this game, especially as, you know, knowing the South Georgia community is just so, I mean, this is like their Super Bowl, you know, y'all Super Bowl down there. And it's also my Super Bowl, but that's just because I'm you know, hey, I'm as, you know, red and black as they come, but, you know, I didn't grow up in South Georgia, but I still feel exactly the same way you guys do. And man, it's one of those things that, Chancey, I don't know how you feel. We talk about this every year when we get into this game, and I'd like to get your thoughts on where you are at this moment as far as whether or not you'd like to see this game move, stay in Jacksonville, or move to a home and home situation.
So for me, I know we talk about it every year, and it's going to keep coming up. And I feel like I don't think I waver too much on this. I think a part of me knows what's probably going to happen, but I do think that this game being in Jacksonville, though it is an inconvenience for recruiting and for that whole scenario, I love it down there, man. You call me biased. You can call me whatever you want. To your point, Georgia is a big state, and it is hard for a lot of people to get to Athens to these games a lot of times. And so to have an opportunity that's closer for a lot of these people, and really to represent this part of our state, and to get a lot of people to have that opportunity, and it's its own unique thing. Very few places have an opportunity like this, and it does suck on years that that's your home game and it takes away one of your games. I mean, it does suck, but I don't like Jacksonville. It's such a weird thing to talk about. I don't like how it's all set up and done. But I do love, but then you get into the game, and I think we were so burned our childhood and how few times we actually win that game. I still talk about it. This game still gives me heartburn, and I have a physiologic response to thinking about going to this game. And even after the years we've had, really the last 10 years have been so different for us, but I still have that kind of response. But I do think it's important that we maintain this as long as we can, because it's not forever, I don't think. And just the way that college football is changing and what our conference is going to, this game is not going anywhere, but we could lose what is so special about this. Because if you've never been to one, I highly encourage you to go while it's still there, because that split stadium and that feeling of being in a full stadium and seeing the entire other team gone.
I mean, you're freaking birds right across the aisle of these
to
guys.
To six people. It's like, it is one of the most rewarding feelings that I have ever had. And it is so fun. And there's a different level of energy that goes on in that stadium with those 35,000+ people on the dog side. It is super, it's intense. It is a palpable energy that is in that building. And it's fun, man.
See, that's the thing, is that you go to play at Jordan-Hare, and it's like, well, like you hate those guys. But you're still about 5,000 to about 83,000, you know, numbers-wise, right? Or, you know, maybe 10 or 15, give or take. You got a small, much smaller portion of people. But in this one, you're like, man, we got half this stadium. We're ready to roll. If y'all want to go, let's go. And that's the thing, is that everybody gets down there. Nobody waits until 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock to show up at this game. You're there all day. People been probably drinking since 6 a.m. I can tell you
the day before.
Yeah. So 28 hours, so, you know. And then last year when we went, though, and it's funny because it's like it brings out some of these people. There's some, you know who the North Floridians are. I mean, you know those kind of people. But you also see some people come out of the woods of South Georgia, too. And like I said, I mean, this is, if they're going to spend all their money on one game, this is it, right? And so we got, I mean, I'll never forget, we had a tailgate and we had some friends down, and we were all, you know, we had stayed in St. Simon's last year, and then we went down and we got invited to a tailgate. It was great, you know, and we enjoyed it. But I mean, we're on the edge of this parking lot, and then there's a street, and the other side of the street is, and I think it's the same bus, Georgia bus kind of thing, that is actually on Baxter Street on every game day. But it's got that platform on top of it. And you're talking about some nasty going on across the road. I mean, they're playing music as loud as the decibels can go on these speakers. And I mean, they're getting down over there. You can't even hear yourself think, much less speak. But yeah, that's kind of, in a nutshell, it's like, this is, it's just a big old party. It's a lot of fun. Everybody's, I mean, you know, it's not like you're sitting there thinking like, I gotta go somewhere in the morning the next day kind of thing. It's like, if you're going down to the coast for this weekend, you know, you're there for the duration. But that's pretty much what you're going to find, though. You go down there, you're going to find some Georgia fans even that are, you might not want to be friends with them in real life. But down there, you might, though.
it's its own, what happens in Jacksonville stays in Jacksonville kind of thing. Yeah. Everybody really kind of shows their country colors come out when it comes to this game. But I think, too, you get exposed to, like, we, in the same way that we're almost coming out of, like, we're coming out of our comfort zone and going to that game, and you start to, you're at that party mode, and you're it's a whole different vibe because you're not in your usual tailgate routine. You're in a different mode altogether. Florida's the same way. The Guido comes out in full force with these guys. They are acting a fool. The what's the music they play, the I don't know, whatever, EDM, that electric
dance,
the EDM stuff, yeah, electric, all that
yeah,
the house music, whatever, that's the
Darude.
that's all they're doing and I'm just a different kind of person. And you can go from, because the stadium, the parking lots are the sides of the stadium, the parking around it. If you want, you know, the moment that you walk into the other team, like you walk into Florida's section, the music changes, the people change, different smells, just different. The whole thing.
The girls get uglier.
Like, they're trashier, and just everything in between. And it's just a whole different vibe. And so I appreciate that about this game, because it's the same every year. There's no change. It's just what side of the stadium you're on, and you're going to Jacksonville, and there's not a home environment and away environment. It's like, because I really don't have a desire to go to Gainesville. I don't think I'll ever have the desire. I mean, if it comes to that, I'm going to go. But it's like, I don't have the desire to go to that game, because I want to hate them differently. You know, I can hate them differently in this environment, and it creates something completely unique and special that doesn't really, like, when you think about it in college football, it doesn't really happen much anymore. There are some neutral site games and stuff like that that have popped up, but you're looking at Georgia, Florida, you're looking at the Red River Shootout, you're looking at very, very few games do what we do and have had that kind of longevity in this type of model. And so, from a very biased opinion, I want to hold on to this as long as possible.
You want to keep it. That was I think I asked you that question about 10 minutes ago. So that was, you and I both went on tangents there for a little bit. But yes, so getting around to answering the question, you'd like to keep the theatrics with this rivalry for the time being, at least. And you know, and the funny thing is, I actually heard what's his name? Jake Reese, whatever, however you say his last name. He was on the radio this morning, and he kind of said, he kind of said basically how I feel. Like, one side of me, I'm so 50-50, because one side of me loves the idea of going down to the coast and spending a weekend, long weekend, and then going to the game is just, going to the game to me is more about going down there because I hate those people. And that's, it's such a different feel, as far as like, this is all, to me, it's all about animosity. So you mix alcohol with that, and you get a recipe for disaster. Thankfully have avoided, you know, getting into a major altercation. But the thing is, it that could happen with like snap of a finger, you know? And I think that what makes this game so beautiful is that, it's not, I mean, to me, it's not about this is a major college rivalry as much as it is, this is just the biggest, craziest get-together of a bunch of South Georgia hicks, you know, or South, not South Georgia, like South, Southern people. And I love it. Like, you know, hey, I'm not trying to hate on South Georgia. I mean, these are our people, you know, and then you cross the border and you're like, eh. Not so much, but it's a bunch of Southern people who just want to just get away for a weekend and get crazy and have a good time, and there happens to be a football game going on, right? So it's a bunch of people that we love to hang out with, and a bunch of people that's what makes it fun. But at the same time, you know, going to this game is it's really a trip, you know, and it takes away. What I hate about it most is the fact that I don't even care about the whole recruiting thing. I think that's a little bit of a farce. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm sure Kirby can probably benefit from having, you know, recruits at home or whatnot. But to me, it's all about, as a fan, we lose a home game every other year. And when I look at, so our home schedule sucks. Now, our November schedule all of a sudden is like, Missouri's pretty good. Ole Miss is pretty good. So we do have a little bit of a, you know, fun end to the season. But, you know, for the most part, the year that we have Auburn and Tennessee, the other year after that is the year that's going to always suck. And until we have a team that's notable that's on that side of the cycle. So to me, it's, I don't know. It's a double-edged sword. I love the coast thing. I love the pageantry that comes with it, and I love just how just hectic it is. But at the same time, wouldn't mind just, you know, having another home game that I, you know, if we pay all this money to the school, you know, it is what it is.
Well, and I think too, in the same way, because to me that is the one thing that I pay taxes in Athens. I have a spot up there that I have to that we go to, and obviously love being in Athens. And I think it's one of those things that I know it's going to go away, and so for me it's like I want to hang on to it as long as I can. And because so much, because like my childhood was going to this game. I mean, this was what I went to. This was my
opportunity. How old were you the first time you went?
My mother was pregnant with me. And that was the first time I went.
Well, shit. I mean, when was the first time you kind of can recall? At least
I was,
or maybe not recall, but.
Well, I can't remember the first one I recall, but I did. I was there for the 2002 win. Okay. I did go to that game
about 10 or 11 years old thereabouts.
Yeah, and I think we went a couple of times before that, if I do remember. But I do remember that I remember that game because we won, obviously, and it was a very different vibe. But I didn't miss a game.
No, we didn't win 0-2. We won in 0-4.
Or 0-4. Sorry.
0-2 should have been a win. That was the reason.
Right. I lost. Yeah. We lost, and I was at that game. And I went to, but I was at 04 because I wasn't there in 07 because I was there at 04 and I didn't go to 07. But I was there in between. I went to the games in between that. So I was there for most of, I mean, I have been there more and lost than I've been there and won. Because most
still,
of my childhood.
Still to this point. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I'm probably 500 now. If we add it all up, but then like I went in 2000 or I went in 2020 when we lost that game too. So I haven't been to as many of the recent wins, cause I haven't been since 20, I didn't go to either the last 2 years. So anyway, it is its own thing. And I think it helps with the, it always creates a unique game. And sometimes that's dangerous because of the environment that it is. And you don't get that home field advantage for one of those situations. And so I get it both ways. And like I say, I think realistically, long term, it'll go to a home and home. But I think I want to hang on to it for a little while longer. So because I'm going this year and I haven't been able to go in a while, and I'm pretty stoked about it.
Well, knowing I hate to tell you this, my friend, but I don't hate to tell you. I think you'll appreciate this. So being that I went to my first game our freshman year in college, which was in 2010, I've been to a total of 9 Georgia Floridas since that point, and I am 6-3. I just calculated, so I'm hitting pretty good right now. I mean, hey, what is that? 66.6%? Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that. Well,
that's like I said, doing a lot better than me, and I've been there for a few of those, so I do know the good feelings that come with that. But anyway, it's a special week, and we hate Florida, and so just I like to make sure that I kind of throw that in there on a routine basis.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, this is like I said, this is volume 4 or 5 on that. You know, it's funny because we sat here before we started recording, and we said, hey, let's talk about the Vandy game from the beginning and then maybe talk about the whole weekend, and we couldn't help but getting into how much we hate Florida. So, I mean, I think that makes sense. And, you know, we're just trying to be here with, you know, you and me and our South Georgia brethren and are just trying to just hate the North Florida people and just Florida people in general as much as possible. And that's what makes this hate week so much fun. The thing is, to me, Chance, I don't know if you're the same way. This is the one week during the year, I'm not so much a, hey, I'm going to listen to sports radio every morning, you know, all throughout the season. And I'm not trying to take in every little podcast I can, and except for Calling the Dogs, of course. But, you know, I'm not trying to take in like media every single day about the Dogs. I mean, I read what I read, and naturally it just comes about whenever I got time. But this is the one week during the year where I feel like every day I'm just trying to see if I can, if there's a new article that came out, or I'm seeing these little audio bits from Kirby, seeing what he's saying, kind of thing. And I love the what surrounds this game is almost as fun as the game itself. And so that's and you know, you got all the, you know, you want, you look at all these you know, old school things from, I feel like there's a lot of traditions and relics and whatnot that are also associated with, I don't know if it's just because it's like a coastal thing, but there's a lot of stuff from, you know, different drawings and artists and whatever, what have you, that kind of like to, you know, illustrate what this weekend's all about. So have a lot of fun with that. But yeah, so it's easy to forget that we just came off of a bye weekend, which I think was well needed. Kirby said that he's never had a bye weekend come at a bad time, which makes a lot of sense, especially considering this is, you know, we're a little over halfway through the season, which is super depressing. I don't know if you feel, you know, have really let that set in, but I didn't even, when we were at 6-0, when we were truly, you know, halfway through the season, I don't think I realized it. And then I looked up and we were 7-0, so over halfway, and I'm like, damn. When did that happen? So Chancey, just kind of backtracking last couple of weeks, you know, what were your initial thoughts? And we can keep this, you know, short and sweet about Vandy. There's no reason to kind of ramble on. That was an ugly game from start to finish. Happy to come out of it with a 17-point win. But what are your kind of takeaways from that game a couple of weeks ago?
Well, we'll get to the big news in a second, but that everybody knows about with Bowers. But I think the big thing for me, and going back and watching that game, I actually kind of had to haphazardly watch the game initially. And so when I went back and watched it, I was able to kind of look at it through a different lens. And man, just sloppy, just a yep. Sloppy game from start to finish, and sloppy and sluggish is really the way that I saw this game. I think our secondary was pretty sluggish. I feel like we were not on point when it comes to that side. I think Vandy, especially early on a couple of those touchdown drives, we just weren't in position, and guys were not where they needed to be, and just not hitting their assignments well, and didn't get a ton of pass rush on defense, and so just there was just all around lethargy on the team, especially on that defensive side. I mean,
I'm sorry, what word did you just use?
Lethargy. They act like they were tired.
Lethargic. Okay, I've never heard. I you know what?
Google it later. It's like lethargic.
I stayed on the north side of campus, so I don't know all these big words.
You just say a little different, means the same thing. But that's how, to me, that's what I saw the game. And even on the offensive side, I think there were some glimmers there, but we were sloppy there too. God, we had so many turnovers and just fumbling the snaps and just dumb stuff to keep a Vandy team that is garbage in this game.
Absolutely terrible. Yeah,
I mean, they are horrible, and we let them hang around. We gave them hope all day long, and we have very much all season played down to our opponent. And I think that's one of the things that to your point earlier about the season going by so fast. I think we've just played such subpar teams to this point that we haven't felt the urge, the need to get worked up about what's happening. And I'm saying that about the team themselves. I think we've been able to lean on having a Brock Bowers, lean on some of these guys specifically that have gave us our safety net. And we're about to go into a week that we don't have that safety net. So how do our guys respond to that? And I really think how we played against Vandy just showed that we were not ready to come in there and dominate how we should have, and this team is just not built the same way as last year. I think they're very talented, and we showed that, but just not built to come in and run all over you unless they're getting their mind right to be able to do it like we did against Kentucky.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about playing down to our opponent. The one time that we had, you know, a bunch of hype around the game and, you know, we knew that we had to play well to win it, we dominated, and that was Kentucky. You know, we played well above what we were expected to, and I think that kind of solidified us as the number one team. And then, you know, the next week we go play Vanderbilt. And the Kentucky game's coming off of that Auburn game, which was, you know, it ended up being a close game. And so you come out of the Kentucky game, which is your best game of the year, most complete game of the year, for sure, start to finish. And then you go have to play in Nashville against Vanderbilt. And you just know these guys are going to come out slow. But, I mean, it's one thing to come out slow and then you have to, maybe your first couple of drives, you have to punt the ball, something like that. But we came out and turned the ball over. We are fumbling snaps. Thank God for Cedric Van Pran picking that ball. I mean, honestly, if that goes Vandy's way, that fumble, I mean, that could have been the turning point to make this game. I mean, I think we still probably would have ended up winning, but it might have been one of those things where we had to kick a field goal at the end to win the freaking ball game against Vanderbilt. So, the small things that ended up going our way were great. And there's some things that we can still capitalize on and build on. One thing that I was looking at the scoring summary here, and the one thing that I forgot about was how beautiful of a route Dominic Lovett ran. You know, we went from rah-rah having such a game against Kentucky to Dominic Lovett just had, I mean, he didn't have a crazy statistical game, but I mean, that route that he ran to score a touchdown, you know, I think a lot of people call it, it's kind of a squirrel route, I believe, and this is might have been a modification of it, but he ran that to perfection, and I'll be honest with you, it's one of those plays that if you're on a 5-yard line, I don't know why every single play, every team, college football, NFL, should have that route on the route tree for that scenario. It makes so much sense because, I mean, you've basically got a built-in motion, stop, turn around, and if you're playing man, the guy's not going to be able to catch up with that ever, top to bottom. So I don't really understand, you know, why it's not used all the time. But and be honest with you, like just use it in the middle of the field. We don't even have to be on the goal line. So that's just, you know, there's definitely some things that we can build on. We had guys get hurt. Obviously, we'll get to the big one here in a minute. But, you know, we had Trust go down for a little bit. Kendall Milton also re-aggravated his ankle injury. I guess we might as well go ahead and talk about the elephant in the room, Chancey. What's your thoughts on the Bauer situation and how that affects the team?
Well, I obviously don't like it. That's not a big fan. So expectation is 4 to 6 weeks with him being out. So obviously we're hoping to have him back toward the end of the season, potentially for a postseason run if that's there. But really for the rest of the regular season, he's not around. And so he's not going to be a factor, which is something that I never wanted to bring up during the year, because you're talking about a weapon that has led us to multiple national championships. At the same time, I think what this does, I mean, you're talking about your best football player on the team. I think we can easily say that.
Best football without player a doubt. In the country. Is what
right,
we're,
right.
Who we're talking and, about here.
So, I mean, you're talking about the premier talent who's going to go top five in the draft, depending on how everything shakes out, but I feel pretty confident in saying that. And then, but let me pull the silver lining out of this, because you have to, I mean, we got to pull something a rabbit out of the hat here, because it's what we got and what we're working with.
I'm ready.
This gives an opportunity for other guys to step up, and this is really, I think you have the safety net of Bowers that prevents you from reaching your next level, and what this does is it really frees up all guys to say, I've got to step up and be that guy. And so we're really going to see, can guys step in and fill that void where I mean, nobody's going to be Brock Bowers, but can in the aggregate, can we figure out how to replace
how many guys does it take to replace Brock Bowers? themselves.
How many full-grown men does it take to replace this one kid from Napa Valley? And so I think you're going to see, I mean, I'm thinking of guys like, I mean, but then also, too, you got to think, we haven't had McConkey this whole year either. And McConkey's starting to get back and get back into full speed, has had two extra weeks to get back into that mode.
Auburn was his first game back, right?
Yeah, he had a couple. He had a couple plays.
I mean, he barely played, but I mean, that was technically his first game of the season.
Yeah, so he was back against Auburn and still converted a couple third down. I mean, he's a third down machine.
Huge third downs. Yep.
I mean, that's just what he does. So we're getting McConkey back at a good time. You've also seen, you mentioned earlier, Ra-Ra and Dominic Lovett are starting to step up, and you're starting to see them kind of come into their own. I think two full weeks, knowing that Bowers isn't going to be there, I think it kind of puts them – and then, two, the play calling, too. You're able to basically take those Bowers opportunities out of the playbook, and you're not even worried about that. You're focusing on these other guys and getting them snaps to give them opportunities to shine. And so I think that's where we're at. And so I don't know how you feel, but I'm trying to pull what hope I can out of this horrible situation because I miss 19 very, very much.
You know, it is one of those things that I saw him go down, and my first thought was I knew that a lot of people would think immediately jump to the worst conclusion, and that was thinking that it was a knee injury, you know, or something like that, or something. You know, don't get me wrong, a high ankle sprain can linger for a long time. I mean, shoot, ask Kendall Milton, man, about his ankle injuries. I mean, he's had issues with them for a long time, but this is not. I knew immediately with the way that his ankle twisted. I mean, the guy basically grabbed his foot and twisted it. And I knew pretty quickly. I thought, okay, this has got to be an ankle injury. I don't think it's going to be an ACL. I don't think it's going to be MCL. You know, which immediately closes the book on his season and probably his career at University of Georgia. But then you start to hear about this high ankle sprain situation. And, you know, Amarius Mims had the tightrope surgery earlier in the year. There's potential for him to come back sometime, potentially, I think mid-November is about kind of the earliest that he could come back. So there was basically, it didn't really come out. The headline wasn't really, oh, Bowers is trying to come back. But there was a decision there. There was a decision to whether or not, you know, he wanted to have surgery. And if he has surgery, you know, from what I understand, that basically, I mean, you can read between the lines. It basically means that he could potentially play and, you know, reading into it, is trying to play later in the year if possible. And I mean, damn if this guy doesn't owe us nothing. He doesn't owe us anything. And that's why, I mean, Brock Bowers will go down as the greatest tight end in the history of Georgia football. And this is the kind of testament, you know, this kind of character and the will to want to play. And he's just such a team guy, you know, big team, little me kind of thing. And I love that. I mean, everybody loves 19. Especially in the last like 4 or 5 years, we've seen a lot of guys that are big team guys, which is awesome. But I mean, this guy just sticks out so much. You can tell by the way that I heard an interview with, it was actually Jackson Meeks and Javon Bullard were talking, I think it was the Players Lounge, and they were just talking about him. And you can tell these guys talk about him so differently. And they know, I mean, they even say, like, hey, this has got probably the best player in the country, you know, bar none. And, you know, they think, you know, they're the same way we think about him. Man, like, this guy should be in New York. That's what I hate most about this injury. I'm not saying we don't need Bowers because, I mean, we would have lost that game against Auburn without Brock Bowers, in my opinion. So we definitely, you know, I would love to have him. But I completely agree that this is a situation where we're going to see, I mean, Carson Beck has done a really, I mean, we've seen him progress pretty much every game. This is actually the first game against Vanderbilt. Excuse me. I don't want to say he took a huge step back by any means. But it wasn't, you know, you kind of culminate on that Kentucky game, you know, for the first half of the year. And he got better and better and better every game. And then, you know, Vandy, you know, you saw him get a little shaky. But I felt like he finished well. And he still led the team. And I tell you what just gave me, sorry, this is, I know we're talking about Bowers. But the play where he threw the pick, which got tipped, you know, it wasn't entirely his fault by any means. But Carson threw that pick, and then he just lays his body out on the line and just lays that guy out. I mean, he knew that they were going to score a touchdown on the next play, but that, you know, 1 yard that he fought for, you never know. The defense might come in there and just stop him on the goal line. And that's the kind of stuff, like, I'll be honest, he completely won me over by doing that. And that's the kind of stuff that you saw. We've seen the evolution of Carson Beck throughout the year, but him going from me talking about his posture and, you know, the way he kind of carries himself during the game, and it doesn't look like a gamer to me, seeing him lay out this guy, you know, launched
at him.
Yeah, he launched. He did. But, I mean, that's the kind of stuff I love to see from a quarterback. Now, I love it, but I hate it. You know, I don't want him to get hurt. But now he has won me over as he's our – I mean, I'm all aboard the Carson Beck train now. But it's, you know, not to say he's without fault by any means, but, you know, he's still – I mean, I can see his leadership kind of grow a lot. But getting back to the Bowers thing, we're going to see him – Carson, and the reason I brought up Carson is he's spread the ball around very, very well. I mean, we've got guys – I mean, Ladd getting more and more healthy these, you know, 2 weeks that he's had to kind of, you know, get healthier. And then we got Ra-Ra, we got Dominique, we still got, I mean, Oscar Delp is going to be great. The biggest thing we're going to miss, Chancey, with Bowers being out, is his blocking ability, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he's always been an elite blocker, and he's elite at every facet of the game. I mean, God, you could just hand the ball off to him. He's an elite running back. He's an elite in anything you need him to be. If we needed him to play tackle, he'd play tackle, and he'd do better than most anybody. The guy is just all around incredible. But I think that's an underrated thing that people aren't talking about. That I think you bring up, but the guys have to step up because now we are where we are. And I think if you look at the last few years, there's been situations. I mean, 2 years ago, we didn't have Pickens all year. We didn't have Blaylock for much of that season.
Nolan got hurt last year.
Nolan was out, but big defensive. I mean, obviously a huge defensive player. So we've been hurt like everybody else. And I think it feels different with Brock because we just know where he's at and we know what he's already done. But I think this gives us opportunities for guys to really flourish and step up, including Carson, because now he's really going to have to, where his safety blanket was with Bowers, he now has to open up. And I think, like against Kentucky, we had a ton of guys that touched the ball and were big time contributors in the game, and I think we're just going to have somebody step up. Guys like Rosemary Jack Saint have got to step up. Some of our upperclassmen leadership are going to have to step up and make big plays, and because we're going to need it, we're going to have to look different. I think during this game, I know we talked about Kendall re-aggravating his injury, so I don't really know his status, but. I'm expecting Dejan to have a big game this week. I mean, I think there's an opportunity there to run on Florida. I mean, God, Kentucky ran for 5 miles on Florida that week. So I think there's an opportunity there. Dejan is sneakily just each week looked better and better, and he's just sliding under the radar, man. That was one run he had against Vandy that he juked four guys starting at the line of scrimmage, and just throughout as he was moving down the field, he just kept breaking ankles with just the smallest movements. But he's just making big plays. And it's just, like I said, just big, it's quiet. I mean, you're looking at these 15, 20 yard chunks that he's getting, but he's a game changer, man, and I'm really expecting him to have a big. I think we're not talking about the rush game enough in this game and how it can have an impact, because I'm expecting a bigger than what we've had game on the ground, which he's, I think, frees up Carson.
Yes, I completely agree with that. I think the run game is going to have to be, it's going to be essential, and there was a play against Vandy, and I texted y'all about this, but Kendall had a 15-yard run or so, in against Vandy, and this was before he got hurt, of course, but that was the one. I mean, I said that I thought that was the best run that I've seen from Kendall, because he showed a little bit of elusiveness and agility and side-to-side ability, and we really just haven't seen a whole lot of. I mean, he's been so hampered by injuries, and I'm hoping that, and praying that he's going to be ready to go this coming weekend. But, you know, that's it all kind of goes back to what Kirby said. You know, hey, this is never had a bye week coming a bad time. And Dejan, I agree with you, man. I love the way he's playing the game, and I've always been a big Dejan fan. He's all about that action, man. He's like old Marshawn, you know. That run, the runs that he had a big that big chunk 62 yarder against Vandy. But man, the guy just, I mean, it. Let's see, what did he average? Yeah, he averaged 7.3 against Vandy. You know, and that's the kind of stuff, you know, you don't have to have the flash at University of Georgia. You don't have to have the flashiness. We haven't had a guy who's just been a standalone back since Swift, right? And Swift even had guys behind him like Harrien and Holyfield was there, you know, around the same time. This is the kind of thing that you're going to have a guy who's just going to be able to churn out, get those third and threes, you know, going to have to get those third and twos. And that's the kind of player that Dejan is. I mean, I feel so much more confident. If 30's in the backfield, I feel very confident about converting on those third downs, those short thirds. But, you know, the thing is, if Kendall's not ready to go, you know, you got Cass Jones, which I've liked what I've seen from him, but it really just hurts just thinking back about, you know, we haven't had Branson this year, and I hate that. And, you know, I think he was poised for a big year this year. But Dejan is carrying the load, and he's happy to do it. I think he just is at this point, you know, if we can lean on him, I'm perfectly fine with that. I don't know if I think that was a career high for him, 20 carries against Vandy. And you're right, man. I mean, if Kentucky, you know, the guy that we held to, what, 30 yards against us in the Kentucky game, if he can run for 250 or whatever it was against Florida a few weeks back, feel very confident that we're going to try to lean pretty heavily on the running game. But at the same time, you know, somebody brought up, I was listening to the radio this morning on 960, and they were talking about, I mean, we're still a passing team these days, which is interesting. And I think that Carson, you know, we can't have, you know, last year and really kind of the year before, you know, Stetson, for whatever reason, this game was always kind of a hurdle for him in the first half. And if we can kind of start strong like we did against Kentucky, you know, we just have that. I mean, every single game this year, with the exception of Kentucky, we've started slow. And if we can get out to a early lead on Florida and kind of break their will in the first half, I think that's super important. But I don't know. You know, it's just kind of tough thinking about. I mean, I think Delp is a really, really good tight end. He's got to work on his blocking. That's why I said that that's the biggest thing, is that we're going to miss Bowers. Bowers is such a mainstay in the offense, but it wasn't, I mean, you watch him on the plays that he's not getting the ball, and he's doing his job to a T. Now, Delp is a little bit smaller, but he's leaning towards the athletic side of the tight ends, right? Not as much in the trenches, but you still have guys that are a little bit unproven behind him. Lawson Lucky is getting healthier, and I think we're going to see Lucky and Delp on the field at the same time, just like how we saw Delp and Bowers. So that's going to be a big thing. I mean, it's not like we're going to be lacking at the tight end position by any means. It's kind of like, I think Javon said it, there's no replacing Brock Bowers, but that just means that instead of us feeding him the ball whenever we need first downs, guys are going to step up across the board. And I have confidence in the guys. I mean, you know, I listed off Ladd and Dominique and Ra-Ra earlier, but I mean, Roseme is a guy that you can depend on, absolutely. And I mean, one thing that the one guy in the receiving corps that I've been a little disappointed in this year is Arian Smith, man. I mean, because I'll text you guys during the games, and I'll just say, man, I need to see more 11. I want to see him streaking down the sidelines, and man, he's had some drops this year. So I got a feeling we're going to see 11 in this game, and we're going to see him make big plays.
Well, and the plays have been there. I mean, he's literally dropped. I mean, they've hit him in his hands in stride, and he's dropped some game-changing plays that we're used to seeing him make. I mean, yeah. We're used to seeing him have two catches for 95 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that's usually the stats that he has, and he would have those stats, but he's dropped these passes, and that we're just not used to seeing him make. And so I like that. I think there's an opportunity for him to step up, and I think offensively overall, I think the offensive line has got something to prove. I think they're pissed off and want to make a statement, and because there's been a lot of doubt around our offense this week, and a lot of people saying that we don't deserve our ranking without Bowers, and so we're going to have the chance to prove how accurate that is. So I think to your point, we've got the guys to make it happen on offense. I think the side of the ball that's really got to prove themselves is our defense, and be able to show up and show out this week, because our defense can make a statement this week. Florida cannot run the ball, but they're throwing it around a pretty good bit. But I think we've got the speed to be able to hang with these guys, but just can't be slow and sloppy in the secondary. And God bless it, we got to be able to get after the dang quarterback. We got to be able to get him on the ground some, or at least pressure him and make him make mistakes. And so that's got to be next.
Well, I mean, looking at Florida's offense, I mean, Graham Mertz he's actually completing about 76% of his passes, which is an incredible number for a quarterback, especially in the SEC. But you look at how they're getting these yards, and I heard somebody talking about this on the radio as well, but it's just kind of one of those things that they are doing a dink and dunk offense, and it's not so much they're not stretching the field, and that Pearsall, however you say his name, he's really their only playmaker in the wide receiving core for Florida. And you know, if you're talking about, you know, if you got him and maybe one other guy who are weapons on their offense as far as receiving the ball, man, you're talking about playing against our strength. I mean, you know, if you got Kamari, I don't know if Kamari is going to be matched up on him, on Pearsall, the whole game or how exactly we're going to play it. But if you have Kamari on him, who else are you going to throw the ball to? I don't even know. I mean, I'm looking at their list of receivers here, and I don't even know these guys' names, which is crazy because, I mean, thinking back about when we were younger and you had the Percy Harvins of the world and all these different, you know, guys that all ran like 4.3s playing for Florida, and you know, everybody was a weapon. They could line up four receivers and you'd be like, well, crap, I don't know what in the world we're going to do. Might as well just back up at snap, right? This is a different Florida offense. Graham Mertz is not a very mobile quarterback. I mean, he can run the ball if need be, but he's less mobile than Carson is, I think. And that's been if you look back at the most recent, besides the Trask loss in 2020, which I'm sorry you had to witness that. But besides that game, you know, you look back at our most recent losses against Florida, and it's been against guys who are running quarterbacks. You know, for those 3 years that they won, I think it was 14 through 16 they won, and it was guys that were able to just make plays with their feet. I mean, they didn't even try to throw the ball. And this is a similar, I guess, offensive set that they have, but they actually have a decent quarterback this time, but it's not... He's not gonna be trying to escape the pocket left and right, which, you know, we haven't exactly been the most aggressive front this year, and I know we've talked about it week in, week out, but the guys that we have up front on the front four in particular have just not been getting the pressure that we really need to get, and this is a game where they can really pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. So I'm expecting us to try to ramp up that pressure in this game.
Well, and I think knowing that there's not much of a run game there, it allows us, to your point, to be able to just say let's go get him, and because we've got the guys in the secondary that can make the plays, and I think we're getting healthy there, and Javon getting him 2 weeks of getting back to full speed, and Kamari, obviously, that's I was thinking the same thing, putting him on. is it Pearsall? Is that how you say it?
Pearsall, yeah, Pearsall, I think.
Pearsall, yeah, something like that. I always look at it and never know what to do with
it.
He's
still a white boy receiver, so you know, he can't be that fast.
So that's what they're doing. I mean, they put up a lot of points against South Carolina. They had to come back in that game and got. But really, if you look overall, there's a lot of hype for the amount of points and stuff that they put up last week or 2 weeks ago against South Carolina, who just got absolute housed by Missouri this past weekend. I think for us, it's all about a quick start. I mean, I think it's just a quick start. Don't give them room to breathe. And that's the thing about these teams we're playing. We keep giving them hope. We keep giving them hope and staying in the game and keeping them excited about being there. It's like, don't give them any of that. Just crush them from the beginning. Get up two touchdowns quick. I mean, Vegas had this at a line of 14.5 points. I mean, I think they see what this game can be, and I don't know which way it's been moving. I haven't looked.
It's at 14.5 now. Well, it was last I heard. It was 13.5. Yeah, it's moved up. So I think it opened at 13.5. So it moved up above a couple touchdowns, which, you know, hey, I guess that's a good sign. But yeah, I had no clue that it had gone to 14.5 at this point.
Well, I knew the last thing I saw was 14.5. And so either way, I think the big thing about this and starting to, for me, it's kind of, I think we have the guys on defense to do this. It's just, we've gotten so spoiled to having some of the most connected defenses that we've ever seen in our history, of guys that just know every iota of how the guy next to him is going to play, and they could communicate without talking, basically. And these guys are just not quite there yet. We've got the guys to do it, and I think we've got a chance this game to prove a point. And because you go back and look at our games, a lot of our points that we've, like, it's so funny. I mean, we're looking at 14 points. I'm trying to think. For the season, you just look at these teams. We're not used to people putting up this many points on us all year long, and a lot of times these are turnovers that have put teams in close scoring positions. A lot of these points are not the defense's fault or whatever the case is. But I think we've just seen our defense has been bending. But it's really about being clean, us getting more turnovers than them, and just really pouncing on some of these opportunities, because the entire world is on Florida right now. I mean, they are drinking the Florida juice, whatever it is. The media is playing right into Kirby's hands when it comes to this Florida team. I don't know why. I don't know why they do it every year, but for some reason it feels like it just comes up every single time. And it's playing right into his hand of everybody all around the country saying, we don't deserve to be where we are. And to their point, we haven't played great, and we haven't played clean, and we've been sloppy. But we're about to see, are our guys made up of something different to get us to show up to this game ready to fight?
Well, I mean, you also look at the way that, I mean, and you know, hey, we're the number one team in the country for a reason, right? I mean, they could have easily bumped us down to two or three, you know, at some point along the season, but we've stayed at number one, you know, set some records, at least some University of Georgia records, for how long we've been the number one team in the AP poll over the last few weeks here. But that's, to me, this Florida game, and just talking about people trying to give them life, I feel like it's really just more so about the fact that we have this huge target on our backs right now. And I don't think that you watch, so I mean, they played South Carolina close last weekend, and they of course had to have a miracle fourth quarter to come back and beat South Carolina, which, you know, we didn't play well against South Carolina at home, right? We were losing at halftime, still came back and decided we were going to play our tails off in the second half. They didn't score a single point in the second half. So, you know, we've seen this Florida team, and don't get me wrong, I think they've gotten better over the year. But this Florida team started off with a loss against Utah and looked absolutely terrible against that team. That Utah team is kind of showing they're a pretty good football team, and they play Oregon this weekend. I don't know if you've seen that, but that's, to me, this Florida team is just not as equipped to beat this Georgia team. And you know, it's probably more so than the last couple of years, the last 2 years. I mean, we had such an elite team. And you're talking about that connection and those defensive players. Well, guess what? They're all playing for the Philadelphia Eagles now, all five of them. And so I just think that this is – we've got mismatches all over the field. And you're talking about our defense having to step up this game. And I agree with you. Don't get me wrong. But – I feel like that's, you know, they're playing against our strength in that situation. Whereas I want to see our offense not so much just have to be productive, but they need to take advantage of the opportunities that this defense is going to give them, because this Florida defense is not good. I mean, they have let up. I mean, well, hey, you know, Kentucky ran all over them. If South Carolina can be that productive against them, that's one thing. Of course, you know, that was in Columbia, but I just think that they're leaning so much on the fact that they beat Tennessee earlier in the year, and I think a lot of people are trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. So they see something like a 14-point spread, and yeah, you're right. I mean, I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, you know, Florida's got a chance to win this game. And what scares me is this team is – we're playing in Jacksonville. And then you talk about it. I mean, every time you go down there, you still get anxious. Because it's in Jacksonville. Weird things happen down there. And we have our childhood is filled with nightmares about, you know, it's Halloween, right? You know, it's nightmares about going down to Jacksonville and just getting our butts handed to us. And so we've got that PTSD from that situation. But man, I just, looking at it across the board, like I said, the matchups just make so much sense for us to, you know, that's why this spread is at 14.5. And I have a lot of faith in our defensive backfield more than anybody. I mean, more than any position group on this team, I have the most faith in our defensive backfield. Now, I mean, guys like Dalen Everett, you know, being on the other side of the field, opposite of Kamari, you know, we gave him grief earlier in the year, but he's played better over the last 2 or 3 weeks. So his progression and whatnot has really been a lot more, to give me a lot more confidence in his side of the field. So I really just, I'm trying to figure out. I mean, that's what I try to do is look at their roster, look at who's been making plays for them, and see if there's, you know, what concerns me the most. And what concerns me the most is exactly what they're trying to do and what they brought up. You know, what I mentioned earlier is I hate that the fact that they are going to, you know, take potentially 4 plays to get 10 yards kind of thing. That's what I hate. And if they can, you know, kind of maintain the ball, time of possession kind of game, that's what scares me the most. But it's like you said, that's why it's so important for us to get out early. And you know, even though we did it in 2020, you know, we got a 14-point lead in 2020 and then just completely coughed it up. But this is a different, very, very different offense in 2023. So that doesn't quite concern me as much as it is if they get the ball early and just, you know, have an 8 or 10 minute drive to start the game. That's when I'm going to start really feeling concerned about it.
Well, then bringing up that 2020 game, I mean, for us, you get up by 10 or 2 touchdowns pretty quick. This Florida team is not really built to come back from some big time deficits if we've got some momentum. They don't have a Kyle Pitts. They don't have a, they don't have one of these guys that is a big-time playmaker. They've been playing better, but have played well the last couple games. But I know, to your point, it all lines up that we shouldn't be too concerned about this. But I know for me, I'm always concerned about this game. I've always got that nervous feeling in my stomach. It doesn't matter where this game is. You see that god-awful blue and orange, and it starts to change how your body functions, and that's where I'm at. I think we've got the guys to do it, and if there's anybody that I'm gonna lean on, it's gonna be Kirby to get these guys prepared for this situation. And so I think to the point of, we've been playing down to our opponents, I think there's going to be, this is truly an opportunity for a mentality shift in how we're looking at our team and how we're looking at our program overall. I think the team can turn a corner here. We're going to find out what we're made of pretty early on. in this game. And because I think you've, I don't know how you have felt through all of these games, but even when we've been down in a lot of these games, I felt confident that we were going to be able to come back and make it happen. I mean, I knew we had the guys to do it. I knew we were in a situation. I still was a nervous wreck during all of it, but I knew that we had the guys to make it happen, where in years past that we wouldn't. And so,
yeah,
I think that's what's different about where we're at. But I'm still a nervous wreck about this game because of what's going on. It can be either way.
Yeah, it's really good to have old Kirby Smart, oh captain, my captain type situation. I mean, he is. It's funny to me because you hear all these pundits and journalists, quote unquote journalists, that are trying to get him. They ask him questions, trying to get him to expound on how this is more important than most games and all this. And he's not going to give it to him. He's absolutely not. But every year this week, they, for whatever reason, they're always just trying to get him to say that the Florida game is bigger than the others. He's not going to say it, but you can tell by the way he acts, the way he speaks, this game is bigger than the rest of them. And he knows, and it's not so much about the rivalry aspect as much as it is, he knows that this is a turning point in the season. We're heading into November schedule where we're about to be playing Missouri, 3:30 CBS game at the first weekend of November. So they can't be looking ahead at that game, which is, could very well decide who wins the SEC East, right? And then the weekend after that, we play Ole Miss. So it's, I think a lot of it has to go, it goes back to Kirby just knows that this game is so important to be a springboard for the rest of our season. And that's why he wants to win it so much. But then you also hear these audio bits and whatnot from the past few years where he's just, halftimes, pre-games or whatnot, just getting the boys ready to go. And you can tell that this game means a lot to him, especially being a South Georgia boy. And that's, that's what makes this whole thing so special. I mean, you can tell there's a lot of hate in his voice whenever he talks about Florida Gators.
Well, it's built into us, and it was built into him from a young age, and then also too in his years of playing. But you can tell there's a different mentality, and I think we're all in the same boat here. I mean, when it comes to that, this game is different. It doesn't take a lot to get up for this game. I think if you're anybody that's played in this rivalry, you can tell the guys they think different about this game, and it's built in that this game's important. No matter what the record has been for the last few years, there's a mentality shift that can take place. And so for us, I think right now we have the momentum in this rivalry, and that's very important. It is something that can change on a dime, but I think momentum is key here, and being in these guys' heads, and he's got to come out and just be ready for a fight and be ready to. I think for us, the world is thinking that we're going to come out slow and timid, and we're going to kind of inch our way, and we very may well come out and do that, and then that tells you where we're at, and we're just not there. But if we come out ready to fight, then I think we're going to see that we'll start to see what we're capable of and what's going to launch us into the rest of the season. There's very much potential for that to happen, and because we could very easily pull a Kentucky on this Florida team. I mean, it very well could be just we're on our P's and Q's and we make it happen. Somebody steps up in the receiving core and just makes it their game, and they can't stop him, and Beck's hitting them in stride. Offensive line's giving him time, and the defense is just smothering them. I think that's a big key too. I mean, I think our defense has been able to do it well. It's just keep these teams, especially in the second half, just keep these teams slowed down. Not letting them have room to breathe and move the ball, get first downs. That's what we got to do. I mean, we just can't let Florida build any momentum. To your point, dinking and dunking, that crap just it pisses you off more than anything. And they just keep getting these long drives that just drag on and drag on, and the way that these games go now, you just don't get many opportunity, and so you've got to capitalize on everything that you get, every opportunity you get, but they've shown all year that there are gaps in their defense, and so it's up to us to make it happen.
At this point, I'm just wondering if there's, which I'm sure there is, some Florida Gators on the Philadelphia Eagles roster, because I'm sure there's going to be some friendly wagers, and seeing who's going to be wearing the school colors, the opposite school, the following week. But yeah, this is huge game. Big game. It's never not a big game. I mean, we could have a losing record. We could both have a losing record. And I think you and I both will feel the same way. Would feel the same way. I mean, it just really is one of those things that you beat Florida and you're going to feel pretty good coming into November regardless. So I'm just expecting the guys. I mean, the one thing that we kind of harped on earlier about how we've been playing down to our competition until it got to a point where, you know, the Kentucky game, you know, start to finish, complete game. But, you know, that just demanded the best from our team. And this, there's no point where this team is going to feel, you know, they're not going to get caught off guard. And they're not going to be down for this game. They're always going to be, this is ramped up. They love the whole split stadium situation. I mean, I think the guys just really enjoy playing in this game. And we've seen in the past, you know, few years, we've seen, especially defensively, we've seen guys just make plays out of their mind in this game. We talked about before we started recording how Nolan Smith was just such a spark in that 2021 game right before the half, made some big plays. We got big turnovers. Before you know it, we're up by, you know, 21 or 24 points at the half, whatever it was. And that's the kind of stuff that we're going to have. I mean, you get a spark in this game, you got to build on that momentum. And I think that the guys are going to be ready to do that. So I think all of them, especially the guys that have been here for a while, like the SVPs, you know, those guys, the Rosemies. Rosemy thinks about in 2020 when he daggum broke his leg in half, you know, in this game, and wants to come back and prove himself and be a player in this game. So it's just things like that. There's always, I mean, this game just always feels like there's so many different ways you can look at it and the disadvantages, advantages and whatnot. And the bottom line is, I mean, our guys match up against this Florida team pretty darn well. And if we execute early, like we talked about, which I think we talk about every week, you know, hey, get out early, get out, you know, big lead early, and that, you know, we'll take care of business from there. But I think even more so this week, that is a huge point of emphasis, that we just have to have guys be, like you said, on their P's and Q's in the first quarter. Really, the first half, and you know, I think things will go well. If we start well, I think things will go well for the rest of the game. So, looking forward to it. Chancey, you're going to be there.
Yes.
How's that make you feel?
Many emotions. Like I said, been a few years since I've been there. I hate that place. I hate going. Like, there's so much of me that I hate being there, but I know I have to be there when I get the opportunity to go. And but it's like, it's such a cool family thing to be able to experience that. I mean, I think about, we talk about it every year, but those times when you meet up after the game and you're back when we didn't win very much, and so you, yeah, those feelings of being able to like see buddies and see family and just be so excited about we finally got one. We got one to help change my, hopefully extend my life expectancy a couple of years. I'm excited about going. I mean, this game, it really does. It feels different. And no matter the situation, it provides a fun environment. But I'm always nervous about this game, and this year is not any different, just because of what could happen at any moment. I'm thankful for the momentum we have, but I'm going to go down there and do my duty and pull my dogs through.
Well, we've had. Did you go in 2017?
I did. Not, no, because I was up in North Carolina that year.
Okay. I didn't go in 2017 either, but either you or I or both of us have been since 2018, I know for a fact. And in fact, we both were there in 2018, 2019. I've been, wait, I take that back. Did you go in 21? I didn't go in 21. well, anyway, forget what all I said. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's just always good to have one of us representing down there. And it's always, it, I mean, I can't believe we haven't brought it up, but you kind of were kind of mentioning it earlier. But, you know, that 2012 game, whenever, you know, we won with the Malcolm Mitchell catch and Jarvis Jones having that strip in the end of the game and us recovering the fumble, you know, I'll never forget for the rest of my life. You know, you and I just meeting, because we didn't sit together at the game, and just meeting at the tailgate, and it was like we just won a war, man. I mean, yeah. And we ended up, you know, you tackled me into the that guy's like cornhole set. He tried to make us pay $150, and we were like, "What, man?" You know, and so there's, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that are listening to this like, "What are you talking about?" But yeah, there was a lot of elation, you know, a lot of aggressive elation after that game. But that's the kind of thing that you feel, that you win this game regardless of if you win it by 3 points or you win it by 7 touchdowns, you know, this is the kind of game you come out of it and you're just like, this is, we just beat the crap out of Florida. Because you and I both grew up where we didn't get to feel that a whole lot. And of course, I never felt it in person until, you know, college. So, man, I'm jealous that you're going down there. I wish I was going to be heading to the coast myself, but I think I mentioned to you earlier before we started, but yeah, I got a little, I was thinking about it this morning when I was listening to the radio, and I was like, I got a little bit depressed about how I was not going down there on Thursday. And, you know, it's just kind of one of those things that you can't make every trip. We're trying to save up for the Texas game next year. So maybe we'll just leave it at that. But, jealous you're going down there, my friend, and you know, happy, you need to send me updates whenever you see a bunch of Florida fans wearing jorts around you, because, you know, just send me some pics of the weirdest things you see while you're and some of it may be Georgia fans, who knows.
Well, the thing is, it will not be difficult when you're down there. There's plenty to choose from. It's really just the best of it's really every cliche that is the South is in Jacksonville for that game. And I love it. I do love it, and I love the animosity. I think you said animosity earlier. That's a good word, because I think I've told this story before, and we'll wrap up with this. But there was one year a guy was under the bridge, and he was standing on, I can't remember if he was standing on something, but anyway, he had a stick that he had wrapped a piece of charcoal around, and they had written on the bridge, they wrote out like different things that Florida fans would have. So there would be like mullets, jorts, and like all these different like sections of, and they would, every time one would walk by, they would all start cheering and drinking, and then they would just mark one of like every fan that would walk by. And I was like, that's the kind of mode that's what I like to see when I'm out there, is just audibly making fun of people to their faces as they're walking by. It's a great thing, and that is what this game is all about. So anyway,
it is truly a lot more hatred. And, you know, people call the Georgia Tech game is called clean old fashioned hate. This is basically the opposite of that. It's not old fashioned and it's not clean. It is just pure hatred, and that's how we like it. You know, let's go down there, and I think we've said this in the past too. It's also a business trip, man. You go down there and you enjoy it, but man, let's take care of business. Let's get the W, and then let's move into our November schedule, because it's at this point it's looking like a gauntlet, especially the fact that we have to go to Knoxville, you know, late in November as well. So, well, we're not going to talk about that yet. We're focusing on Florida. I'm happy you're going to be down there, my friend, and looking forward to like I said, getting some updates from you on it.
All right, man. Well, we're gonna pull them through. There'll be a little chancy clan down there, and we're gonna do our best to make it happen. So, we'll give it our best shot.
My man. All right, brother. Go Dogs.
Dogs on top.